This is Galen Gidman, and you're listening to Episode 1 of the Racer Page Podcast. Welcome to the Racer Page Podcast with your hosts, Galen Gidman and Roger Wagner. I'm Galen Gidman, and I run Racer Page. So Racer Page, we build professional and easy-to-use websites for racers. If you're a racer out there, you run real life, you run sim racing, you race a bike, we can build a website for you. So check out racerpage.com, and if you're interested in that. But here we are today. This is the Racer Page Podcast. I've got my co-host, Roger Wagner, on there. And hey, Roger, what's up?
Not a whole lot. Glad to be here. Episode 1. Can't wait for this to become a big deal. Hopefully all the fans will appreciate it. But I am Roger Wagner. I am one of the owners of the Dirt Racing Network on the Facebook. We broadcast live sim racing and real racing. Not as much real racing as we'd like since the seasons are off right now. But we will be putting some real races up there. Go by and look for the Dirt Racing Network on Facebook. Give us a follow. And you watch a lot of great sim racing. You watch a lot of great real live dirt racing here pretty soon. I can't wait to get this thing going, man. I'm excited about us doing this.
Yeah, me too, man. So you and I, we've actually known each other for since 2014. We met on iRacing. And since then, we've been on teams together. I was instrumental in helping you put together the one of the original iRacing dirt leagues that actually is still going today, and kind of was one of the things that was kind of foundational to starting the DRN too. And you know, we've had lunch together coming through town. We've known each other for a while, and it's so cool that we finally get to do this. So what we're going to be talking about, this is a podcast about racing. We're both big racing fans. I watch NASCAR, I watch IndyCar, a little F1, been getting into dirt here the past few years. And then Roger, you're kind of more heavily on the dirt side, but a little bit into everything too, right?
Yeah, I've been a dirt fan my entire life, grew up around it. And I enjoy it probably more than any other form of racing because it is grassroots. And this is where all these guys really got to start. It doesn't matter if it was a go-kart. It doesn't matter if it was a midget, if it was a quarter midget, if it was a mini sprint. This is where almost every racer got their start, was out in the dirt. And I still watch NASCAR. I still watch some IndyCar stuff. I'm just not as deeply into that anymore as I used to be. I've kind of reverted back to the dirt because dirt is making a resurgence nationwide, and it's the most fantastic thing. I've been so longing for dirt to come back to the forefront of racing, and it is doing so. And so this is going to be a lot of fun to come in and talk about dirt with you and still be able to relate and talk about all of the Formula One, the NASCAR, IndyCar, all of those racing. Hey, we might even talk a little drag racing. You never know. Motocross, Supercross, I'm really into that too. So you never know what we could talk about here.
Yeah, totally. And like I said, you know, dirt racing, to follow up with what you said, I think it is making a resurgence. In the last, you know, 3-4 years, whatever, you just see so many more people online, so many more people in person. You even go to a NASCAR race, and there's a bunch of people there wearing dirt racing t-shirts and stuff like that. So it's interesting to see the resurgence it's making, and it's made people like me that kind of, you know, came from the NASCAR, the asphalt, you know, side of it, go, hey, there's a lot of people that really like this dirt racing. What is this? And then, you know, once you go to a track, you're hooked.
Yeah. And I think part of that has come from, if you look into NASCAR right now, and you look at all of the names and the names for the last, let's just call it 12 to 15 years. You have the Tony Stewarts. You got the Kyle Larsons. You have Chase Briscoe. You've got Christopher Bell. You have all these guys that go from one to the other and have come from one and moved to the other. And now they all do kind of both. Now Tony Stewart has retired, but Tony Stewart bought Eldora. Tony Stewart runs some of the biggest races in the country at that track, and he is now going around to various tracks when they have a big event and working on the track crews to try to provide the best racing surfaces for these guys to be on. You see the Kyle Larsons that go around and run the World of Outlaws, come down and run the midget cars, run any kind of race car they can get into. And they bring the fans from one to the other and back and forth. And it has just grown both sides of the sport, paved side and the dirt side. But it's because of the bridge is being built between the two worlds. And originally NASCAR started on the dirt. A lot of those guys running around local tracks. It was a huge circuit. They had 60 some tracks. Most of them were dirt. Then they started paving and it kind of revolutionized the sport and made it bigger. But it got its roots in the dirt. And so all of that is kind of coming full circle right now. And these guys bringing fans from both sides is just, the resurgence is huge. And I am such a fan of almost all of these drivers right now. There's so many I can't even think of right now, but they're doing the greatest things for the sport. And they're so personable when you get them at the dirt track. I ran into a bunch of these guys this weekend at the Chili Bowl, and I was able to just walk up, approach them, and talk to them. And it was one of the coolest experiences ever.
Totally, man. Well, and you mentioned it, you just got back from the Chili Bowl, actually. So the Chili Bowl, you know, again, me coming kind of for more from the asphalt side is something that up until the past few years, I was, you know, totally unaware of. And then only in the last maybe 2 or 3 years have I tried to follow it a little bit. But I guess for somebody that maybe is like me and hasn't, you know, been into a lot of dirt racing. So what is the Chili Bowl? And kind of tell us about that a little bit.
Well, the Chili Bowl has been around since about 1987. Lanny Edwards and Emmett Hahn kind of started this. It's been held at the Tulsa Expo Center since its inauguration. That venue has changed names a couple of times, but it's always the Tulsa Expo Center. Whether right now River Spirit is the sponsor of it, it's had several different. But they build a quarter-mile track inside of a 10-acre covered area. The Expo Center covers 10 acres. They build a quarter-mile track at one end of it. They have a huge indoor pit area. They will have over 300 midget cars there for a week. They will run starting on Monday and run a full show every night. Top two guys that went in the feature are automatically into the A main for Saturday night. All the other cars start working their way through elimination races. This year they had an O main, worked it all the way up until the D mains, had two D mains, two B mains, or two D mains, two C mains, two B mains, and then the A main. That was a long night. They started at 10 a.m. They didn't get done until well after midnight finishing that. Probably one of the biggest, if not the single biggest, midget race on the planet is the Chili Bowl. Cars come from all over the world for that. Guys come in from Australia. Guys come in from Canada. They come from everywhere to fill this place up. 300, I can't remember the exact number right now, and I did have it written down. I've lost that paperwork somewhere. It was 350 cars at least were there this week. And they ran a full show every night. It was fantastic racing. And that feature was awesome. Last lap, last corner really sealed the deal for Christopher Bell to win his third consecutive.
I think it was 342 cars, if I remember right.
I think that sounds right.
And this might be wrong, but I want to say it was like 10, 11 countries. You know, you have definitely, you know, United States, Canada. I'm sure Australia sent some guys. 10 countries may be a little high, but I know it was definitely most of the states. So really, really a cool event. I was able to find a way and was able to watch it this year. Totally, totally an awesome race. But I think one of the things that I was surprised about just hearing you talk about your trip there was all that there is to do there and see and that happens there that's not even, you know, a part of the race itself. And I guess maybe that's one of the things that makes it so special, where if you talk to a dirt fan that's been there, like you just got to go, you know, there's nothing like it. It's totally unlike anything you ever do. And it makes it such like a must see event for people.
Well, yeah. And there's a couple of those. I would say right now, three that I can think of off the top of my head that would be bucket list dirt races to go to. One, the Knoxville Nationals. That is the granddaddy of them all. That is the home of sprint car racing. To go to Knoxville, Iowa, go to the Knoxville Nationals. That's got to be on your bucket list if you're a dirt fan. The Kings Royal in Eldora, Rossville, Ohio. That is another one that's got to be on your bucket list. And if you're a true dirt fan, coming to Tulsa, Oklahoma to see the Chili Bowl. It's an indoor race, completely inside. Everything is indoors. The trade show, the pits, everything is indoors. That building is enormous. Everything happens inside, and there's so much to see and so much to do. And the drivers are just half the time wandering around and glad to sign an autograph, take a picture, meet the fans. I mean, it's an experience that you can't get in a lot of places. So those three definitely, and I'm going to put a fourth one kind of starting to grow more and more every year, is the Gateway Nationals up in St. Louis. It happens in December. That started off with just modified cars inside on that third mile track in the arena up there in St. Louis. Now this year, or last year, they added the late models. And this past year, they added the midgets. So it's three different cars in there. And that thing takes them from Wednesday to Saturday, and they finish it up. So that's another one I would say. Those four definitely need to be on your bucket list if you're a dirt fan. But we have seen some of the greatest racing, and you're going to see the same guys at all of these. You're going to see the Christopher Bells. You're going to see the Kyle Larson. You're going to see Tony Stewart. You're going to see Chase Briscoe. You're going to see all these guys in there. You're going to see Rico Abreu. These guys just go, that's what they want to do. That's their bucket list. They want to go race these races. And so that much for dirt, having that many names and those guys going back and forth, that is what's helping this whole thing grow and just kind of blow up right now. I mean, MAV TV covered that live, covered the Chili Bowl, the final night live from start to finish, even with them reworking the track in between all of the mains. And their numbers for viewing were way, way up because people just love dirt racing.
Totally, man. I know it was my first time watching it, and you know, MAV TV, you know, it's not a Fox Sports One, it's not NBCSN, but for, you know, what's a smaller channel, and I'm sure much more limited resources, man, they put on a good show. And you know, there were segments in the middle where, you know, I want to say it took like well over an hour to prep that track for the A main, you know, maybe an hour and a half or two. It was a little bit. And they just kept things rolling. I think they had Matthew Dillner hosting it. Bob Dillner. Matthew's his brother. Matthew's the brother, right? So it was Bob Dillner was on there hosting the coverage, and they had some great driver interviews. And yeah, totally a great experience. I really enjoyed it. And then the race was awesome too. So for anybody that didn't see the race, Logan Seavey led the beginning. Another guy that, you know, kind of came from the iRacing ranks. I know I've raced with him before on iRacing. And then during the past few years has really started to make a name for himself, racing for Keith Coons and those midgets. I've seen him race at my home track up in Lucas Oil Speedway in Wheatland, Missouri. And I know you've seen him race in person too, Roger. But I think he qualified on pole, led maybe the first, I don't know, 10 laps of the race. And then Kyle Larson went out there and put a big gap on the field. And in the last, what was it, the last lap and a half? I mean, Christopher Bell came out of nowhere, closed up what must have been almost, I want to say it was like a second lead full straightaway. Kyle Larson. Yeah, full straightaway. Which again, I mean, it's a quarter mile track inside of a pole barn. So that's not, you know, that's not a great deal of distance, but I want to say the gap MAV TV was showing was, you know, 8 or 9 tenths of a second, and passed Kyle Larson in the final corner, and really, really a stunning finish to the race that I know it caught me off guard, especially when you look at someone like Kyle Larson. Like Kyle Larson, you know, might only be rivaled in terms of his dirt racing stardom by Christopher Bell. And I think that everybody going into that race, I know I certainly was this way, was hoping that we would get to see those two duke it out for the win. And really most of the race, Larson had such a good lead that you never thought, you know, Bell would get there and get to battle with him. And then, you know, I don't know if the track just changed too quick for Larson, or, you know, maybe it's just a mistake, but at the very last second, Bell got up there and got it from him.
Yeah, those two are building a rivalry. And the thing about it is it's actually a very friendly rivalry because they are very good friends. I got to sit with all those guys, everyone that you talked about, Seavey, Bell, Larson, Chase Briscoe, Justin Allgaier. I sat with all those guys. They came over to a sim setup that was there and put on a show. They the guys that own the place, it's Tim Sims, Dirt Track Sims out of Lima, Ohio. They were at the Chili Bowl in the trade area, and they put up, iRacing put up a challenge. We're going to bring these pro drivers over, and we're going to let a Joe, just everyday anybody that paid their money to come try to qualify. One guy is going to get out there, six cars. They're going to race. We're going to give away a $1,000 purse to whoever wins. It was $1,000 in cash. So all those guys come over. I was there to broadcast it on the Dirt Racing Network via my phone because I wasn't asked to do it via my big system, which I could have taken with me. But that's another story for another day. And I got to sit and talk with all these guys. Immediately when that was over, Larson and Bell are right there shaking hands, kind of high-fiving each other, saying, all right, let's do it again, because Kyle Larson made a mistake on lap one, kind of spread out the field a little bit, and no one ever had a chance to catch Logan Seavey, who ends up going on and winning the race and the $1,000. They wanted a rematch right away, and those two are joking around and palling around about it. I liken their rivalry on the track to when I was a kid watching Sammy Swindell and the King go at it. That was a different kind of rivalry. Steve Kinzer and Sammy Swindell kind of had a, we really don't like each other rivalry, so we race each other really hard. These two have a, we're going to race each other extremely hard, but at the end of the race, a big hug, a high five, a handshake, and we're cool again. Let's go hang out. So we're seeing something develop that is going to be awesome for years to come. These two are going to race each other in NASCAR for years to come. They're going to race each other on the dirt for a long time. And we as fans are going to be the better for paying attention and watching every bit of that as that rivalry develops and grows. And I think it's one of the coolest things in motorsports right now, hands down.
I totally agree with you on that. And you know, like you said, I mean, this rivalry that the dirt guys have been seeing these guys race, you know, even together for a while now, but it's about to move over into the NASCAR side. I'm going to go ahead and just be the first to admit that up until this year, I was not that impressed with Christopher Bell, the NASCAR racer. I really thought he was in good equipment and maybe the equipment was helping him look better than he actually was, especially his time in the KBM trucks. He just didn't do a lot that really wowed me.
Well, I've had a benefit that you maybe haven't. Christopher Bell is a local kid, and I have heard his name since I moved to Oklahoma almost 20 years ago. As soon as he started racing, I started hearing Christopher Bell and micros and midgets and all sorts of dirt stuff, and just hearing that name over and over again. So when I heard him in what was at the time the Camping World Truck Series, it didn't come as too much of a surprise, but knowing that he came from a dirt background, it's going to take a little while for that transition because you can't drive those cars anywhere near the same. And seeing his progression through to last year, it is a complete night and day from where he was when he broke into the Truck Series to where he is now in the Xfinity Series. And I will say that it does not make any difference how long he goes over there and races. When he comes back to dirt, it's like he never got out of a dirt car, just to watch him go out there. And when you put him and Kyle Larson together on the track, I don't care who else is out there, one of those two is bound to win, and those two are bound to end up nose to tail, side to side, wheel to wheel, almost every single time. I watched it in the midgets when they were up at the Gateway Nationals. It was a ridiculous battle, and that track was terrible. That track was rutted. It had holes in it, and they still battled each other and laid on each other and pushed on each other the entire feature. When they got so separated here at the Chili Bowl, I thought, man, Kyle Larson finally going to do it. He's finally going to gap himself, and he's finally going to put a stamp and say, I have the upper hand in all of these battles right now. One mistake in two corners, and he went from the penthouse to the outhouse, and he ends up second. But to watch that happen, knowing what I know about Christopher Bell and watching Kyle Larson, this is a rivalry that's not going to end anytime soon, but it's never going to get dirty. It's never going to get nasty. We're going to see some of the greatest racing for the next 15 years, probably, as long as we pay attention to both sides. I feel for Kyle Larson because I watched him throw away more wins in dirt and in the Cup Series just because he's very aggressive, he's very fast, and he has a style that is conducive to being both of those things. What it's not conducive to is finishing races. And I don't know how long that's going to last before he finally flips the switch and turns the corner, but it is a lot of fun watching him be the only guy to go run right against the fence every week in a NASCAR event. So I can't wait to see him actually make that transition and get that win that puts him, you know, oh, I can do this every week just like this. But when I get to this point, I have to dial back just a touch. He's going to start becoming unbeatable.
That's my hope, man. And you know, you see some of these guys, and that was kind of the first thought I have had when Kyle Larson lost that race was, you know, I've seen this story before. And you know, for all the Kyle Larson fans out there, I don't know if Kyle Larson's mom's listening, but please hear me. I'm a Kyle Larson fan, man. I've from the day he came into the sport, I've loved watching him race. I remember distinctly, you know, even his first season when he was in the truck series running a partial schedule. I mean, I really enjoy watching Kyle Larson race, and he's obviously a fantastic driver. You know, at a raw talent level, I put him and Kyle Busch at the very top of certainly the Cup series right now in terms of just the ability to drive a car. But
raw talent.
You see, he has a trouble closing the deal a little bit. And, you know, I know I've seen it in many NASCAR races. He runs very aggressively. He runs the wall when nobody else will. I know at least two Homestead races that he just absolutely spanked the field and then didn't get the win. And, you know, that's happened several times with him. And I feel like that's kind of a hard thing if you look at racing. It's like a hard thing to grow out of. You know, there's a lot of guys with talent, but there's also this killer instinct. And this is something I've experienced even in sim racing. Some guys just, they've got a killer instinct, and you can take, you know, guy one who's real fast and guy two who's equally fast. And if guy two has like this killer instinct, he's going to win all the races. I don't know if it's a calm. I don't know if it's an aggressiveness. I don't know what it is. They just know how to win. And so I hope that we can see Kyle Larson grow into that. Because like you said, there's nobody out there that's, you know, more talented than him. But it's something he's struggled with a little bit. And I think if you look at Christopher Bell, he's won pretty much the races he should have won. At least on the NASCAR side of things, and he's won a couple he probably shouldn't have, which leads me to think he's got that it factor that just knows how to finish the race, how to win the race, how to take, you know, 50-50 odds and come out, you know, 70-30 on them.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think he may be a little more seasoned in the finishing department, and Kyle Larson is still very fast, aggressive. He just is learning to close the deal. He's going to break through. I have no doubts he'll break through. And once he does, he may run off a string of races, wins that we've never seen before. It's all going to depend because he's fast everywhere he goes. I don't know that there's really any place that I've seen him, especially in NASCAR, where he's not, you know, very quick week in and week out, unless they just unload a bad car. But if the car is close, he can take a bad car and make it look really good. And he can take a great car and lead. He just has to learn when to roll it back enough to finish the race. And when that happens, like I said, I think it's going to be an impressive string of wins. But I was hoping that we could move on, maybe talk a little bit about this Rolex 24 that's coming up.
Dude, I'm so excited about that. I actually just finished my iRacing 24-hour race. It's the first time I've done it last weekend. And at 24-hour race, it gave me so much more perspective, I think, on how long that actually is. And, of course, I'm in my house. You know, these guys are out walking around Daytona at night. It's cold. It's a long day. You know, they've been out for several hours, you know, on the grid and doing, I'm sure, sponsor appearances and everything before it starts. It is a long, exhausting race.
Yeah, I have not had the experience to do any kind of endurance racing like that, sim or otherwise, but just kind of paying attention to what it is, you've got to be in fantastic physical and you have to have mental acuteness. You've got to be super sharp every time you take a corner, especially when the lights are on, when there's darkness, because the track don't change. But you're using the headlights and whatever track lights they have to try to get around, especially this Rolex at the infield in Daytona. What is it? 17 turns or something like that. And watch some of these guys flying around in there. And then the high speed portion of the track. I mean, there's just so many different variables and so much you have to be completely aware of. I don't know how long these guys train to do it, but it is fun to watch. Even if you're not a road racing fan, this is one that's very fun to watch.
Yeah, that's the story for me, certainly. You know, I don't watch a lot of IMSA races, maybe one or two throughout the year. I like watching Watkins Glen just because it's such a great track. But the Rolex 24 has definitely been a race during the past few years. I kind of see it as like it's the kickoff to the racing season, right? It happens a couple weeks before we go to Daytona and start everything up with the NASCAR. You know, dirt throughout the country is still a few weeks out from getting going. And the Rolex 24, it's on that off week between the championship games and the Super Bowl, so you don't have any NFL that week. And it's just a great race to turn on and, you know, watch a couple hours on the couch and then maybe put it on your phone while you're eating dinner, put it on a laptop while you're going to sleep, just kind of follow through the race. And it's definitely become one of my favorites. And I was looking over the driver entries this year, and, you know, I feel like every year we get some big names, but there's a lot of them this year. I mean, I was looking at pretty much anybody that's anybody in IndyCar is racing this year. We got JPM, we got Pagano, Elio, Scott Dixon.
Fernando Alonso's on that list.
Yeah, well, and they started getting some F1 guys. I saw Maldonado, and then, of course, you have, you know, Alonso, who's easily the biggest name in the field this year. And that's so cool to see that because, you know, it brings attention from all over the world. You know, just Alonso alone, to see him get into that race, it puts a lot more eyeballs on it. And it's so good for motorsports to have that, I think.
Well, I think one of the biggest names that's going to draw a ton of attention is going to be the return of Alex Zanardi to this race in his, you know, physical condition and the amazing technology that has gone into the car that he's going to drive. That BMW is fantastic. I mean, he's able to do everything with his hands. Lost his legs in a F1 wreck, and now he's able to get in, and he's going to run, two or three stints in that race? And they're long. What are they, 4 to 6 hours, right?
Yeah, those are not short stints. And I saw that video you're talking about, and I'll link to it in the show notes for everybody to see. But basically, like you said, he lost both of his legs well above the knee in a IndyCar crash in 2001 in Germany, and BMW has built a car that he can get into and control completely via his hands. So I was watching this video, and again, I'll link to it in the show notes so everybody can see it. But basically, where you would have typically like a paddle shifter, he has a thing he can pull forward and back with his left hand that serves as the throttle. And then like a little paddle shifter type device on the right side, and he pulls back to shift up and pushes it forward to shift down. And then for braking, there's actually kind of like a handbrake, but the handbrake itself has a little trigger on it that he can also use to shift down. And so it's really, really a cool setup that BMW has built him to be able to run this car. And what he was saying was, you know, in the past, maybe he's done some racing where, you know, he would use a prosthetic leg and they would modify the pedals a little bit and he could kind of do that. But then it makes the driver changes are really difficult because they kind of have to build the car around him. But the beauty of doing it hands only is that other than the presence of that, you know, sort of a handbrake that the other drivers can just ignore, it's really a stock setup for the other guys. So there's no real, you know, there's nothing that the other drivers really have to give up to make the car work for him. And it's just so cool that they've been able to do that. And he's able to compete at such a high level.
Yeah, I thought one of the cool things in there wasn't just that, you know, he could do all that with his hands, but when you're running those cars, you're upshifting, you're downshifting, and all that is being done with his hands. Well, he's got to steer with one hand and brake with the other. When you're doing that, you're going into a corner, you're going to have to downshift. And so they have an electronic button to help him downshift that is on the front top edge of the brake handle, and he's able to just flick it with his fingers, and the car's automatically downshifting. And then when he's pulling the throttle, steering the car, he's got another button to upshift with. And it just made it so user-friendly for someone who doesn't have the legs to push the clutch and to take his hand and shift the car. He's got to use that for braking. And, I mean, I don't know how long it took him to put this thing together and to design this alone, but just to see him get out there and do it with this car. If they have any success at all, it's going to be not just a testament to him, but to all the engineers that worked on this whole thing and got it back. He sounds super excited to be out there doing it, period.
Yeah, well, and you have to really look at a guy like that and admire the grit and determination to keep doing this. You know, I mean, that was a bad crash. You know, that was a life-threatening deal that he went back that he went through all those years ago. And to still go out here and say, you know, you're right, I'm not as good as I once was. Maybe I don't have what would be the most natural way to drive a car. I don't have my legs anymore. But what can I do? Focus on what he can do versus what he can't do. And take that and find a way to be successful and find a way to compete. And then to see a company like BMW look at that and go, hey, that's something we want to align ourselves with, and let's spend some time and money to figure out how we can do this. I mean, it's a feel good story all the way around. And, you know, if they have success, then I'm sure it will be broadcast. And, you know, we may see Good Morning America segments or the Today Show. I mean, it's a great story, and everybody should be really proud of themselves that's working on that.
You'll probably see him on SportsCenter or something, but I know I'm going to try to tune in and watch at least some, if not, you know, a vast majority of it. They're going to be putting it on NBC Sports Network and the NBCSports.com. All 24 hours are covered, right?
Yeah, they're covering all 24 hours. So, you know, typically the beginning and the end is on TV, and I think that'll be on NBCSN this year. But all 24 hours is on NBCSports.com. And one of the things they're doing that I saw that was really cool is they've brought in their broadcast teams from really all the forms of motorsports that they do. So they've got the NASCAR team. So Chris Devoda and Kyle Petty and Dale Jr. and Steve Letarte, all those guys are coming in. Rick Allen's going to be there, I know. And then they also have their entire IndyCar crew. So Lee Diffie and Townsend Bell and all those guys are going to be working different parts of the race as well. I know Townsend Bell is both broadcasting the race and driving in it. And the same with AJ Allmendinger. I know he's going to be part of the broadcast and participating in the race. So it's really cool to see people like NBC Sports. You know, they don't have to do this. They don't have to bring in, you know, I want to say it's like two dozen different broadcasters that are going to be working this race, maybe more than that, but they are, and they're really investing in it, and it's going to help motorsports. It's going to grow motorsports, and that's something we can really be happy about, I think.
Well, every time we can grow the community as a whole, it doesn't matter if it's on the pavement or if it's in the dirt, that's a good thing, because racing is part of the fabric of the country, in my opinion, and anything we can do to improve it, TV coverage especially. And there's so many things you can do now. There's so many streaming services, and there's so many internet places to go watch things. And you have, you know, the Hulus and the Netflix and all these places where you can go back and rewind and watch things that maybe you missed when it happened live. For all of these TV entities to come together and to put it on demand and stuff like that, that helps, because, you know, if people that missed the Chili Bowl now can go back and they can watch it and go back and watch for the rerun on MAB TV. They can go back and they can rewind it on demand and watch those things, and they don't have to miss out just because they couldn't be there. Anytime you can do that for people, it just endears them more to you, and it brings everybody just that much closer, and it grows the community, and I'm all for everything we can do for that. It's just going to be fantastic. This year is going to be 2019. We're going to grow the racing community probably two times what it has been, if all the estimates are correct.
Well, here's hoping, man. And hopefully this podcast can be part of that. That's our goal with this, man, is you love racing. I love racing. And we just want this podcast to be a place that, whether you're a fan of Hope and Wheel, whether you're a fan of dirt, whether you're a fan of oval, whether you're a fan of drag racing, whatever, that you can come and hear what's going on. And it's, you know, it's going to be our perspective on it. Just a couple guys talking about it, or even some interviews. I know, Roger, you were hitting up some different people that whose names I'll keep secret right at this point.
But thank you.
Possibly some different big name interviews that we'd like to get on the podcast at some point. So we'll be trying to organize those as in the next few weeks. But man, we're just so thrilled to be doing this podcast, and I got to thank you, Roger, for agreeing to do it with me.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. And as you said, there are some big names that are on the tentative to-do list. And as soon as we can announce those, we will. They'll be one at a time. We won't bring them together, but one at a time. My thing is, I'm ready to get to going to some races. And I know you have some on your schedule this year, but I know I'm going to go to several dirt races locally. I know that the Lucas Oil late models are coming to the Salina High Banks again in June. We're going to that. I'm going to the Texas Outlaw Nationals in Mesquite, Texas at Devil's Bowl Speedway for the World Outlaws this year. And I have a couple of others that I really, really would like to go to. I know we're going to try real hard to go back to the Gateway Nationals, but I've got a couple of others I don't want to say until I know for sure we're doing them. But one might be Knoxville and the other might be the Kings Royal in Eldora. And if those come together, I am going to get to see some of the greatest dirt racing in 2019, period. And then I'm still hoping to make my, let's call it annual trip to the Texas Motor Speedway to watch one of the two NASCAR races in Texas. Where are you going this year?
Yeah, so I'll probably spend most of my time at the racetrack, probably up at Lucas Oil Speedway in Wheatland. I'm in Springfield, Missouri, so we have a local track right here in Springfield. But man, Lucas Oil Speedway, once you've been there, you want to keep going back. So I'm sure I'll catch a few weekly shows every year for the past several years. I've been meaning to go up and catch a Show Me 100, which is definitely one of the biggest late model races in the whole country. That they have up there. And so hopefully I'll get to go see that this year. Last year they opened an off-road track. So I would love to go see one of their off-road races throughout the season too. So, well, hey, Roger, I really appreciate you coming on this show with me. And I'm looking forward to next week too, man. We're going to be back next week. And I think we'll be talking some sim racing, iRacing in particular, and maybe some motocross. I know I've been following that this year. And then of course the results of the Rolex, I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about there.
Yeah, I would, I'd like to talk a little bit more sim racing next time myself. And I'm a big fan of motocross, got a couple of favorite drivers and riders, and one of them is leading the points right now. So I'm hoping Ken Roczen can hold that down. He's had so many injuries and now he's back. We'll talk a little bit about that. And I'm excited to see what the results are for the Rolex 24 and find out where Zanardi and some of these guys finish. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. I appreciate you inviting me to start this with you, and I hope this goes on for a long time. I hope all the fans really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's the hope, man. This is for us, but this is more for the fans, man. I'm just so excited about this podcast. And remember that this is all put together. This is the Racer Page podcast, and Racer Page here at Racer Page, we make easy and affordable websites for racers. Again, any type of racer, we can do it for you. Racerpage.com to learn more, and we'll see y'all next week.